Anin, Anin. Welcome to First Nations Radio. I'm your host, Dan Wapipaw. And I'd like to express that you are listening to KSKQ 89.5 FM, Ashland, Oregon, and KSKQ translator K231CW 94.1 FM, Medford, Oregon, also streaming live at www.kskq.org. Any views or opinions expressed are solely those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKQ. It's KSKQ's mission to produce community radio that empowers the residents of the Rogue Valley, build sustainable and resilient communities through the exchange of ideas and the celebration of cultural diversity. Okay, so today we're going to be doing a cold read of What It Means to Be a Human Being by John Trudell. First off, I just want to express that underwriting support for this program is made possible by Rogue Tax Professionals in Medford, Oregon. The team at Rogue Tax Professionals want to express their deepest gratitude for the business owners and cannabis industry for their support of the accounting firm over the last several years. Rogue Tax provides business advisory, tax preparation, and tax planning services in the hemp and marijuana industries. For more information about Rogue Tax Professionals, visit roguetax.com. KSKQ thanks Rogue Tax Professionals for supporting community radio and listeners like you. So, one word on that is that marijuana, the word marijuana, was basically put in place by the government to put a scare against what the plant is actually called as cannabis. So let's put that right there. All right. So that has nothing to do with what I'm going to be talking about today, but I just wanted to say that. So What It Means to Be a Human Being by John Trudell. So this was the 15th of March, 2001 at, let's see, it's the, this is a part one introduction by Maria Gallardin. John Trudell, at the benefit of U apostrophe W-A of Columbia, this is a moving, thought-provoking spoken word and poetry address given in honor of the Uwa and their resistance to oil drilling on their ancestral lands in Colombia. John Trudell is a poet, musician, and advocate for the Native American rights. He did not set out to be a writer. His gift, poetic gift, developed out of the remarkable, sometimes horrifying circumstances of his life. John Trudell grew up around the Santee Sioux Reservation near Omaha, Nebraska. In 1969, he participated in the Indians of All Tribes occupation of Alcatraz. From 1973 to 1979, he served as the national chairman of AIM, the American Indian Movement. The government response to AIM was swift, Trudell said. They waged war against us. They hunted us down. They killed, jailed, destroyed us by any means necessary. In 1979, that war took a terrible personal toll on John Trudell. On February 11th, he led a march to the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. approximately 12 hours later in the early morning hours of a fire of suspicious origin burned down John Trudell's home on Shoshone Paiute Reservation in Nevada, killing his wife Tina and their three children and Tina's mother. Devastated by the loss of his family, Trudell withdrew from the world. Writing words became his way to keep some sanity and continue to survive. Trudell returned as a musician, poet, and a highly sought-after public speaker. You are about to hear the first half hour of a talk he gave in March 2001 in San Francisco. The hall was filled to capacity. Trudell took the stage with a thin folder of his poems under his arm. He began with a disclaimer of sorts leading to a free association of thoughts about the earth and sun, ancient wisdom and modern intelligence, and what it means to be a human being. Here is John Trudell. Well, here is me reading John Trudell. Well, and I'll be pausing throughout this to talk about maybe some of the subjects and issues that he brings up. Well, I'll try to be coherent. I don't know exactly where we're going, but wherever it is, we'll be okay. But if I say anything that you don't agree with, that's just really what it is, right? Because I really am crazy, really. And a poem. I flew with the eagles until I fell from the nest. I ran with the wolves, then got lost from the pack. I slowly go crazy every day. Some days run faster than others. I had never strayed even into heaven. It was hard getting past hell. I traveled through and beyond the death and birth of man. I am Iktomi. Imagine running out of... just a pause there. Iktomi is a trickster and with the Sioux. Imagine running out of... Imagine mistaking authority for power. Weaving life's free spirit into patterns of control. I heard all that was said. Until now, I hear nothing at all. The edge between twilight and dark. The great lie lurks. Prostitution of the soul. Anyone can do it or not. I went down some roads that stopped me dead in my tracks. I am Iktomi. I have been the mirror to others reflecting self. I have known love that can't help but love, and I've been close to that hurting way of love. I flew with the eagles until I fell from the nest. I ran with the wolves, then got lost from the pack. From the earth, wind cave memories, one with the sky, time of different motions, dog days dreamer, chasing the neon, woven into minds. From my place in line, I fell out of order. I have been here. I have been there. I have been anywhere, and I haven't been anywhere. And I'll be back again. I am Iktomi. Imagine running out of imagine, mistaking authority for power, weaving lives of free spirit into patterns of control. In the reality of many realities, how we see what we see affects the quality of our reality. We are the children of the earth and sky, DNA, descendant, now ancestor. Human being, physical spirit, bone, flesh, blood as spirit, metal, mineral, water as spirit. We're in a time and place, but we are far from time and space. The past is part of the present. The future is part of the present. Life and being are interwoven. We are the DNA of Earth, Moon, planets, stars. We are related to the universal creator, created creation, spirit and intelligence with clarity, being and human as power. We are part of the memories of evolution. These memories carry knowledge. These memories carry our identity. Beneath race, gender, class, age, beneath citizen, business, state, religion, we are human beings. And these memories are trying to remind us, human beings, it's time to rise up. Remember who we are. End of poem. He continues, I think I want to talk a little bit about who we are because, see, reality is based upon our reception of reality. It's what it is, but we really need to understand that, see, and I think one of the objectives in life is to understand. It's not enough to know, right? I know how to turn on a TV, but I can't even begin to understand how it works, so it's not enough to know. So I think some of the purposes that life teaches us in the further we make it into life, the more coherency we have left and we will understand. Sometimes I feel like I'm in a reality where I'm surrounded by all these things that I don't know who they are. They don't know who they are. And because they don't know who they are, they don't know where they are. They don't understand the language that they speak. So there's a general confusion and chaos that takes place in their reality. It's almost like, you know, the way they make all little chaos go on inside of the internal combustion engine. You know, all the sparks and all the stuff that's flying that makes it create energy that runs something. Well, anyway, it's almost like this. The perceptional reality that is being carried around in the human consciousness. So anyway, who we are human beings. And the DNA of the human being, my bone, flesh and blood is literally made up of metals, minerals, and liquids of the earth. We are literally shapes and forms of the earth. That's who we are, and we have being. Our being comes from the relationship to the sun and the universe. Because our relationship to the sun, I mean, let's be, you know, very coherent and clear about this. Without the sun, we would not have life. All right, it's almost like the rays of light that the sun represents and brings to the earth. See, this is the sperm that gives life to the womb that the earth is. So our relationship to power and our relationship to the reality of power is connected to that relationship. Anyway, what I see, the human being, part of human, is being mined through the human experience. See, they're mining us. And whoever they are, I don't have names, but we'll just figure some of that out on our own because, you know, I'm sure they have names. I'm real sure that they do, but I can't say them because they don't want us to know their names, maybe, right? Because what they're doing is really, you know, in a way, it's like vampirism in a lot of things. But anyway, in a mechanical term, we're being mined. And the being part of human is being mined through the logic of the human, all right, and the emotions of the human. The being of spirit, the spirit of being, is what is being mined through the logics and emotions of the human in order to run this system, see? So take a pause here. So this is a talk that he's given that's been transposed into writing. So they're putting in all his, you know, subtext and nuances into this. So to continue. I mean, this is the purpose of technologic civilization. They call it technologic for the very specific reason. This isn't an accident, okay? You know, it truly isn't. But the purpose of civilization and one of the civilizing processes is to erase memories, all right? To erase memories because we have ancestral memory. It's encoded in the DNA. It's a genetic memory. You know, at how technologic civilization and everywhere that it goes, the longer it's there, the more isolated the human beings. But they're not called human beings. They're workers and citizens, etc., right? All right? But the more isolated they feel, they no longer, you know, maybe they remember their grandparents or their great-grandparents. But see, you got all that ancestral knowledge that's encoded in the DNA, but it's been cut off, so it can't activate because we're not conscious that it's there. Then we can't. It just makes things difficult. See, this is the memory. It's very important for them to erase, right? It's about who we are. It's memory of identity and self-reality. So anyway, we come from where we come from. Every one of us is a descendant of a tribe. Every person in this room is a descendant of a tribe. At some point in our ancestral evolution, common collective genetic memory that's there, you know, that's encoded, like I say, in the DNA. And for every individual encoded in our individual DNA, all right, is the experience of our lineage from the very beginning, whose whole perceptional reality was what I was just saying. All things have being. We're made up of the earth. All my relations pray to spirits, see? And they didn't pray to man or human form. The closest they came to it was they prayed to the spirits that were called ancestors. All right? Because they were praying to those ancestors for help and guidance. They understood that they understood that we were borrowing today from the past and the future. We are borrowing it from both places. So they had this understanding of reality. They knew that to keep balance was the purpose. That was the purpose. The reason for being was to keep the balance. This was like, you know, what I will call spiritual perception of reality. And because the spiritual perception of reality, they understood that life was about responsibility. It wasn't about the abstraction of freedom. It was about responsibility. That life was about responsibility. So a spiritual perception of reality was based upon that. We are children of the earth. The earth is our mother. The sky, the sun, and the sky. These were our fathers, all right? But this was, and our reality worked for us. Okay, so he breaks into another poem. So what he's saying there, the earth is our mother, the sun in the sky is our father. But he doesn't mention the creator. So the creator is a great mystery. We call the creator great mystery. Natives don't really see the creator as a man spirit. So a man god subserviates the woman god and allows this earth to be raped. I believe it's a very deliberate attempt to shape the god into whatever form allows the colonizers, the predator-plunderer society, to go out and harvest Mother Earth's resources for cash as fast as they can do it. So, okay, so now he breaks into a poem here. This morning, the mirror didn't know who I was today. I remember some of the whatever happened to's. Then sometimes I'm too occasional to understand or comprehend what I believed or believed, what because I was delusional or was because I was delusional, pardon me. Let me get that over again. To understand or comprehend what I believed was because I was delusional. There is no other explanation. Clinging to the program, obviously, is the obvious lie. The past is more than a memory. Experienced in the future, before the fantasy was the dream, fantasy is the leftovers, a toxic waste from the mining the dream. It's a perceptional thing, this technologic mental state. Is this reality or more desperate lies? Manufacturing perceptions, packaging free thinking into reacted thought. Sometimes when it rains, it's not that simple. When the sky has reasons to cry. This evening, the mirror saw that I looked kind of familiar tonight. End of poem. He continues, in our common collective genetic ancestral mind, not one of the ancestors went for the new show. Nobody wanted it. They wouldn't buy the tickets. So the show was going to die. So the show decided rather than it die, it would make our ancestors die until they accepted the show. This is what happened. It happened to all of us. Whatever happened to the Indians here, trust me, it happened to the tribes of Europe. You know, it started happening to them 3,000 years before it happened to us. Personal opinion, way longer than that. All right, continuing. So by the time the descendants of the tribes of Europe got here, they had it down. They were very efficient. They could do in a couple of hundred years what it took. I mean, no offense. Okay, now he goes into another poem. Moths and other sacred wings, butterflies and bees whisper, the breath and breathe the wind. Blessed way, blessing way things. Dreams are the mind streams. Thought pictures of the spirit. There are dreams of the day, there are dreams of the night. Thinking and dreaming are related. Dreams of the day, we make our own. Dreams of the night, part of eternal stone. There are dream takers, taking from dream worlds, taking dreams as a way of stealing thoughts, turning minds inside out. Dream slavers want to change our connections to ourselves. Mess with our dreams, make us unsure, unclear about right and wrong. Feed our dreams and instincts to industrial profit machine. Difference between dream and fantasy, reality and illusion, center and no center. Dreams of the day keep our spirit alive, our creative mind, who we really are. The dreams can create and heal, follow our original purpose. Dreams are protection, good medicine, blessed way things. Sun and moon, continue. We're all on one journey. So let me find out where I'm at again. All right, so he continues with his talk. So in our collective genetic ancestral memory, we had experience of encountering the technologic perceptional reality, because somewhere, as this thing unfolded and refined itself, it was spreading over the planet. A religious perceptional reality was used to replace a spiritual perceptional reality, all right? Because with a spiritual sense of reality, you're connected to everything, man. You know, you're connected. But with a religious perceptional reality, you see, you committed a crime before being born. See, you're bleep forgetting here. I think we can assume that as an expletive laughter. I didn't make this up. I'm not making it up now, all right? So anyway, in order to justify being here, to get to stay, you had to submit to the male dominator chain of command, the authoritarian system. See, this in this new religious reality, it said that, you know, well, now there's one God. The gods battle it out amongst themselves. See, I can't envision, to me, I've never been able to envision gods or goddesses. I can't imagine a creator in human form. I mean, no, you know, I can't. And I think our road, our path to trouble started when we started to doing it that way. All right, you know, looking at the earth as a mother and these things, you know, call it goddess or whatever, and this and that. But I don't go with God, because I know it's a limited perceptional reality. See, they forced it on us. But the trouble came, see, when we decided that the creator entity had a human form, see, because then that rationalized and justified mistreating of the rest of the natural world. All right? I mean, sexism and racism came out of this perceptional change, because once the earth, you know, under the new God thing, the earth was no longer the mother. The earth was property of this new God and all God's children. See, God didn't have a lot then, and they were very mean. So their numbers expanded through terror. See, but God's children was their job and objective was to subdue the earth for this God. So in order to achieve that objective, they had to create sexism. See, sexism has got to do with how we live with the earth and the racism, because now that the earth was property, you know, all the spiritual value was away from the earth, you know. Real spiritual value was now a religious perceptional thing. And right, so it wasn't all-encompassing, and it wasn't just part of the reality anymore. So not a one of our people really went for this, because it's like, you know, this is a major perceptional reality change. But anyway, we committed a moral crime for getting here. So now we had to submit to that worldview. To me, coherently to me, it's clearly blatant, a blatant and very blatant perceptional altering how one perceives reality. I mean, it's brainwashing, intensified at its maximum, right? Because our ancestors were forced to see life differently in order to remain just physically alive. All right, so, you know, it's like, I don't really know that much about what happened here, but I would suggest every person of European descendancy that you go and you study, you want to know more about who your reality. Go and study your tribal ancestry and see how you got civilized, all right? See how you got civilized, because terrible things happened, and these terrible things, these are what altered the perceptional reality. See, and because the basic part of this, in that altering of the perceptional reality, what we're getting down to is, see, that it made us become irresponsible as human beings, because, see, we can blame the bad guys for being bad guys, but that don't work. It's not enough. It's about human beings remembering their spiritual reality, their spiritual identity, and accepting the responsibility from that perceptional reality, taking responsibility, because the bad guys only get away with what they get away with because we don't take responsibility. There's a difference between blaming somebody for something and taking responsibility. So when Columbus got here, he got off the boat and he said to the first people he saw, "Who are you?" And the first people he saw said, "We're human beings." And Columbus said, "Oh, Indians." See, and right now, when I'm talking, Columbus is every descendant of a tribe of Europe that came. We're not talking one person here. We're talking a mindset, all right? This is a mentality that came, the Columbus mentality, we name it, because isn't about discovering. You know, it's almost like this is when the virus got here. It's like how long it's been here, and this is how long it's been here. But because, you know, we've never had this disease before, we have no natural, we don't have immunity to it. But if we can survive the ravages of this disease, we will evolve an immunity to it because we are part of the earth, and that's what happens, all right? Anyway, Columbus got here, and he didn't know what it meant to be a human being. See, that perceptual reality of being a human being and what it really meant had been erased from the descendants of the tribes of Europe by the time they got here. So when we introduced ourselves to the Europeans as human beings, they just didn't get it. It was part of their it wasn't part of their perceptional reality. They might know how to say the words, all right, but being a human being had changed in their reality. All right, we know there was an Inquisition, and this Inquisition went on to 400 to 500 years in Europe. The purpose of the Inquisition was to alter the perceptional reality of the descendants of the tribes of Europe, to make them believe and see reality the way the church wanted them to believe and see reality. The church called it, they waged war for possession. This is important. They waged war for the possession of souls of the godless heathens. And to be a godless heathen, you just didn't believe in God. It wasn't a part of your reality. Or another way of becoming a godless heathen was to question the authority of the church to do this. See, now, again, I'm not making this up, you know. This did transpire. These things did happen, and they killed as many people as they could. I guarantee it. In order to get the other ones to submit. So they killed as efficiently as they could with the technology that they had at their disposal at that time, all right? And because they created a rationalization as to why to do it, so it just became as efficient as they could do. At some point, the descendants of the tribes of Europe no longer knew what it meant to be a human being. They just didn't know. They didn't want to know. So the descendants of the tribes of Europe, in the end, had to love what they feared, which was there to possess them. See, I think it messed up love in a lot of ways, you know, they haven't sorted out yet. You know, no offense, but anyway, all of this took place through our intelligence. Our intelligence now, whoever it is we pray to, right? Whoever it is we pray to, however we pray, whatever, however we do that, all right? I think it's that we have an obligation and a responsibility. It's about respect. If we respect our Creator, then we should use our intelligence as intelligently as we can and as often as we can. And that means with clarity and coherence. That means to activate and respect our intelligence and activate the thinking process so that it's going the way we want it to be, because that's why it was given to us. Our intelligence as a human being, part of all of this reality that is going on, we were given intelligence. This is what was there to help us through the evolutionary reality, to ride the balance, so to speak, of the evolution with our intelligence. It's our medicine. It's our protection. It's our self-defense. Those fears, doubts, and insecurities in one's daily mind and reality, how much do they affect one's daily mind and reality? How much do they affect the ones of the people around them that they're connected to and that they care about? It's the repercussions of fear and the doubts and insecurity. What's the repercussions and fears and doubts and insecurity? Because I guarantee you every day when we get up, we use our intelligence to create those effects. So it isn't that we're not using our intelligence or we can't use our intelligence. We can't stop using our intelligence. But it's about, as human beings, taking the responsibility to be clear as one possibly can be about it and to use our intelligence the way the Creator gave it to us to use. Keep the balance, our intelligence. So this is everything that ever happened had to change the perceptual reality. This the battleground had to take place. The real battleground may have been the bleeding and the dying, but it has to do with intelligence to alter perceptional reality. So again, about respect, see, if we respect our Creator, we have a responsibility to recognize the intelligence and use it as clearly and coherently as possible as we possibly can. Otherwise, we're just pretending. We're just being delusional and rationalizing and justifying and just telling ourselves a big lie. If we did not use our intelligence as intelligently as we possibly can, that's how we show respect to our Creator, see? And you can't say you don't know because I just told you, all right? So that's part one of John Trudell speaking in San Francisco in 2001. So he's passed on, and he was a friend of the family's, and a beautiful man, and he's a brilliant mind, and some would even call him a prophet because his ability to see through the morass, see through the miasma of colonization. So we want to be able to honor him, you know, in the best way that we can. So say a prayer for him, say a prayer for his family, you know, because he's given us a lot, you know, and so he's brought his medicine to this world, you know, like our word for baby is Abenuchi, and that means one who is put down here for a specific purpose, you know, and we believe that all people come to this earth with a medicine, and this medicine is designed to improve this earth and make it better than it was than when we first got here. Okay, so we're going to continue with part two, introduction. So John Trudell at the benefit of the UWA of Colombia. This is part two of a thought-provoking spoken word and poetry address given in honor of the UWA and their resistance to oil drilling on their ancestral land in Colombia. John Trudell grew up on and around the Santee Sioux Reservation near Omaha, Nebraska. Okay, I already read all this. So, yeah, speaking at the Women's Building in San Francisco. Standing room only audience. So part two, when you vote for the lesser of two evils, I condemn you. Much applause. Bleep, you doing. I imagine it's WTF. Anyways, if you vote for either of the evils, I condemn you. By accepting part of the, by our acceptance of the lesser of two evils, so to speak, we are using our intelligence to create what goes on. See, I don't vote. I never have. I vote in Amsterdam, whatever that means. Laughter. Picked up a winner, too, but we didn't have recounts. We knew. But I don't vote because, I mean, for my reasons for not voting are very valid. See, when they create the voting system here, the democracy here, when they created it, it was the majority. Hey, look at me over here. Oh, I see you. So you're the enemy. You can't play. So the little old majority rule thing came out of the smallest number of people, all right? The smallest number of people on the entire hemisphere, continent, all right? They decided it. It was going to be a majority rule. There's something about it, all right, that I don't trust. I inherently don't trust it. And I don't understand why you do. Okay, so now that we're in the smallest numerical minority on our own land base, they say, come vote. Now, so in that scenario, who's stupid, me or them? Well, anyway, and I'm bringing this up about democracy for this reason. It's about coherency and using our intelligence. I think that every generation of human beings has a responsibility to decide how they and their immediate descendants will live on the earth. I think it's our responsibility, all right? I think it's our responsibility to do that. And I think when I look at democracy as a native person, to me, it's just another chain. You know, freedom is a lie. You know, democracy, I mean, You know, think about it. Every democracy had a land-owning class. Every democracy had some form of slavery. Every democracy had some form of sexism. And I'm saying this not because I'm trying to overthrow anybody's anything, but because, you know, it's just, you know, it's not about that. It's about, oh yeah, it's about the next generation. We live in an evolutionary reality, and maybe it needs to evolve, and maybe in the best interest of our seventh generation, it may be the enemy, but I don't mean just by itself. I'm talking about the industrial faces of control systems, whether it's democracy or fascism or socialism or any of these industrial faces and mechanisms to control the mass of people, because every one of these systems have a small class and an ethnic rich, an industrial ruling class, and a planetary ethnic rich. And every one of these governments, no matter what they call them, they serve that master. So don't misunderstand me. This is about a perceptional reality here. I come from a tribe, and whatever has been going on in my evolutionary journey, I still remember that. I'm confused about a lot of things, but I remember that. I remember that when I was born, there's never been a question about memory. But they're trying to make that memory go away. But the memory of tribes, see, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, Geronimo said the Americans, they're messed up. You know, he called them the Americans. So I feel a kinship to those ancestors and what they saw and what they tried to stand up against. I feel more of a kinship to them than I do with a lapdog to the system and promote its lie, all right? Because I think it's irresponsible. And I think that when people are afraid to think about what's be, and when people are afraid to think about what needs to be thought about, that's the danger of the lie. Casualty of war, afraid to think. So, you know, I will say democracy because you're not supposed to say anything bad about democracy, but I'll say it. And I'm not saying what I'm saying. I don't look at it as I'm saying something bad. I'm just saying this is what it is. You've heard the other side, so I want to say this side, all right? Freedom of speech, you know. Let's go freedom of speech. I think the part of the lie there, all right, I think it should be about responsibility of thought, freedom of speech, responsibility of thought will then take care of free speaking. But freedom of speech or freedom, it isn't so much about it. It isn't about freedom of speech. Let's make this more, it just ends with a dash. The idea of freedom, see, words, every word has its own meaning because it makes its own sound in a vibratory world, all right? So every word has its meaning. So, you know, so like democracy, that noise, that sound, noise, whatever it is, my ancestors 30 generations ago had never heard that sound. That noise was never made here on this land base. It's alien to this, right? So that you know democracy and whatever all these things. Then he breaks into a poem here. I'm reading John Trudell, What It Means to Be a Human. So he brings into a poem, away in a way, he was just killing time, or was time killing him? Which way did up go after he found down? Away in the city, it's lonesome in town. Away in a country, all is not fair. Away in a heart, he's been locked out, away in a dream. Who has he become? Away in a mind, been through the wrong. Away in a society that just can't see. Away in a way, how it feels to be free. He was just killing time, or was time killing him? Which way did up go after he found down? And he continues with his talk. And for us, it's about words. So I think word freedom shouldn't be used so frivolously. You know, I think that somewhere in the course of this, it is about responsibility. That word needs to float around in our real, in our consciousness, in our reality. We need to plant that seed and let it nurture our consciousness. that life's about responsibility, because we will synchronize closer to what is, or to what it is we seek in our life, because it's very difficult to deal with an abstraction of freedom by people who don't know who they are and what they're saying. You know, okay, so no offense, I'm not talking about you unless I am, right? And believe is another word, right? Freedom, believe, democracy, believe. See, I come from a people who have beliefs, and I'm part of those beliefs, and I respect those beliefs because they are part of my reality. But on the other hand, every time I hear somebody say, I believe, it makes me cringe inside, so I cringe a lot. Misuse of a word. No, hold it. Misuse of a word here. It's throwing the wrong sound out into the vibratory world. It should be more in harmony, all right, with the sound. And I think believe might be a word that's not in harmony, although it's the illusion that that's been created, that we've been led to believe. But I think it's better to say either I know or I don't know, or I think, I have intelligence, I think. My intelligence has been drugged with misinformation. The intelligence has been sent on a trip. I'm tripping, so I believe. Oh yeah, so we understand it in that way, friends? So it's more passive, right, believing. And I think we should respect our intelligence, and it should always be active, you know? If it should be active, if we can create our own daily insecurities and miseries and fears, we can see the same intelligence to create the whole much better reality. I'm telling you, see, the collective reality, all the causes and the movements and all the things that we feel are right and that we chase, see, the reality is not going to really change until we change this other one. And here I'm going to say this, because this has been going on for like 3,000 years. You know, everybody has been protesting and standing up to see, but as it encompasses, as it gets us and alters our perception of self and reality, right? The same old struggles come. See, I'm just a new generation saying new words, dancing to new music, to new instruments. But it's the same old thing. Check out a little bit of Paris or France, 1430. Check that place out, man, all right? It's the same thing. Check out the rise of the industrial civilization or the industrial revolution in America in the 1800s. Same thing. So the same struggle by human beings is just trying to stay alive, all right? It has been going on for a long time. So what I'm saying, what I mean is, like, so it isn't that we haven't been trying for such a long time. We've been trying to write a thing to make it more ride the balance. So I think that maybe we should consider, really needs to consider, the synchronization is the being. It is us who are being mined. So we need to interfere with that mining process. So we need to become as clear as we can. You know, it's our responsibility. There are rights and no freedom. There are no rights and no freedom without responsibility, I guarantee it. It's about responsibility, and it's not, you know, it's about, and not to be afraid of the word. You see, I think responsibility, I think the liberators, that's the liberator's word, right? If you want to be free, then be responsible, all right? If you want to be free, then be responsible. I think that's a liberator's word, because when we're taking direct action with our intelligence, because, see, there's not anything wrong with this. I mean, how we perceive reality. But from this moralistic thing, there's not something wrong with this. We really need to be, real to ourselves. We will get closer to synchronizing to our balance. The first thing is we need to be real to ourselves. There's a lot of repeats in this text. Because if we can't face ourselves, then you know we should think about that. Because the other thing is, whoever it is, the coming generations, the creator, the whoever it is, that if we're not willing to face ourselves, right, then in some kind of way we diminish our respect for them, because we are here to be real. But if we look at ourselves, if we would look at ourselves clearly, the Diné Navajo have a way of saying, I'm going to the fourth mind, which means to look at everything. But you rise up out of it. You look at it from outside, from the top, from the bottom, all the way around, from the inside. You look at it from under it. You look at it that thing for it, every way you can see, you see it for what it is, and then you act. See, and we need to understand to do that without judgment. It's not our responsibility or our right to judge. You can judge nothing without judging yourself. It's just that reality, you know. So what's a trip, you know? And it's already been determined that most of us, we've judged ourselves negatively through our fears and our doubts and our insecurities. So let's look at that thing about judgment. It's not it's our responsibility to see clearly and learn from what we learn from our clarity and coherency. That is our responsibility. It's not our responsibility to judge and condemn. So in order to be real to ourselves, you know, we've got to be careful about rational self-rationalization and justification and these little things that pop up disguised as something else. We need to be real to ourselves. And if in our reality, that's all written there. These are shameful things, all right? Then don't lie to yourself about it, because a shameful thing isn't necessarily really a shameful thing. It's how we perceive. But if there are, I'll put it this way, if there are things in our reality that are not comfortable with, right, then we should see it for what it is without judgment. And if we can live with it, it will evolve out of our behavior pattern. You know, so if it bothers us, we can live with it, then it'll stay. And the things that we do good on the other end, the things that we perceive from that perception, see, everything should be exactly for what it is. Because it's also time to turn to another thing that goes back into the spiritual reality that's been altered by the rigid religious reality, is that reality is, see, life needs to be approached. I think, see, there's too much pride. See, to me, I see pride the way I see pride in some ways used. I think pride is something I'm proud of you. See, I think it's something you give, but it's not something you take, because every time I have ever seen anyone take pride they take too much of it, and then they mess things up. I've seen it organizationally. I've seen it individually. I've been the player, all right? So I think, you know, maybe life is about more about humility. See, we come from an ancestral past, a part of a genetic memory. See, the humility, where humility was connected to our participation in reality, and we are grateful and we are thankful. See, so many times, again, out of using the word as a habit, see, we so many times, all right, then we say, I'm proud. Really, we're happy. And wouldn't it be more clearer just to say that I'm happy, or I'm glad, or appreciate it? But these things that come from the being, the pride comes from the human, but these things come from the being. Because, I mean, it's these types of alterations that were done to us, all right, that keeps us from synchronizing. And there is no answer. The only answer is that we have the intelligence and the responsibility and the ability, all right, to create solutions to the problem that you are confronted with, because there are no solutions. Now, I guarantee you know, you can deal with the lesser of two evils, but there is no political solution, and I think you know that, right? I think everyone knows that, but they just feel powerless to do so. They want to avoid dealing with that reality. And I'm saying, hey, let's look at reality and deal with reality. I've got intelligence. I accept the challenge. I have the ability. This is why I was given it. There are some miscalculations in me. I kind of messed up a few things along the way. So what I learned from it, it's a part of who I am, right? But that doesn't mean the coherent parts and the clear parts aren't clear and aren't coherent. because they try somehow in some subtle way, it's been created into the human being's mind that you see you've got to be the perfect person in order to get it done. At the same time, right? Nothing's perfect, and we all know that and say it. This is like a contradiction. So just accept ourselves for who we are and show respect to our Creator, all right, by using the gifts the Creator gave to us. And I'm not trying to get anyone, you know, I'm not trying to get you to believe me or not to believe me or any of that, right? Because it's just really about thinking, you know. The objective is about thinking. Because our relationship to power, I'm going to start to wind out of here, but with our relationship to power is connected in our relationship to clear, coherent use of our intelligence. All right, you had some rain here, right, and some wind. So let's look at us. Every human being is a raindrop, all right? And when enough of raindrops become clear and coherent, then they become the power of the storm, and that the existing reality has to endure it and can't arrest it, can't indict it, change it. It has to deal with it in a realistic way. Well, maybe human consciousness, maybe we're all snowflakes or raindrops, or we're all pieces of a little tremble. We're all little tremblers of the earth, right? So maybe we're all part of that, see? And then we have become clear with our coherence. See, this collective thing happens when you have the power. And on the way to that power is the power that we connect to as we live our lives. Because I'm telling you, how many of you feel powerless and deal with your life? I'm telling you that there's anybody in here that feels powerless to deal with your life, you know, don't take two aspirin. For the next generation that's coming, I think in understanding about the value of, and reality of intelligence, of our intelligence, I think it's very crucial that they have that understanding to make it through this, because they are being mined at a rapid rate. I think it is very crucial, all right, to the continuation of living species, not to the humanoid species, I mean the living. So it's got to be put into the intelligence for them to have an understanding, the next generations, but the only way we can do it is we can't tell them. I mean, we can say it to them, but we have to show it to them, because we are part of an evolutionary reality and will influence the evolution. We will, because our intelligence is always active, so it's just about taking responsibility. But we will influence the evolutionary reality, and we can influence the evolutionary reality out of a base of lost frustration and self-judgment and things. So it's going on. That's been going on for the last 300 or 400 years here, which has led to this situation. Or we can use some clarity and coherency to influence the evolutionary reality in a more clear, coherent way. Every struggle that we must engage with, whether it's political or economic or social, all these struggles are necessary, right? To keep the circulation going. The other part of the reality is that we have to outthink what it is that we're challenged by, or that oppresses us, or does whatever it is. We have to outthink it. It's that simple. The first act of being free and liberation, right? All right, is the act of taking our intelligence back, taking our imagination back, our ability to think. That's the first act of liberation. The very first act, all right? The consciousness liberation, of conscious liberation. The first steps toward respect for the Creator is understanding that we have intelligence, and doing the second act. That's our intelligence. And for the next generation, you know, we have a responsibility to direct as much intelligence into that as we can. Because this thing about life and death, you know, this technological reality has been around for 3,000 or 4,000 years. I don't know however long it's been around, you know, but it's the reality is based upon death. So therefore, at some point, it must die. Our whole objective as human beings is to stay alive. Do you get it? I mean, not really alive, not surviving and existing. I'm talking about alive, connected to life and living. See, we have to outlast it, because we can't outfight it, because it's violence and it's aggressive mindset, all right? It's beyond parallel. But that doesn't mean that it's powerful. That just means that it's violent and it's aggressive and it's without parallel. You'd better be damn careful of it. But that's what it means. That's what that means about power. Our relationship to clarity and coherency and the use of our intelligence is our relationship to power, and we can outthink it. Simple math. It's a mathematical thing. In the authoritarian state system, only X amount of people are given permission to think, okay? So at some point, theoretically, we will out-surround them if we will just do what is necessary to get there. Your descendants and my descendants depend on this, right? To keep the reality of living alive, and we are going to influence the outcome no matter what we do. So what I'm talking about is, well, let's take some responsibility, all right? And let's influence it in a more clear, coherent way. Outthink them. Trust ourselves and our ability to think. And to each and every one of us was given just as much intelligence as we need. It's not a contest. I'm going to close right now. And I thank you for being here and getting whatever you got out of this, all right? I'm not responsible. I'm just ragdoll. And these entities just here, I want to vent today. So here, get him. All right, he reads another poem here. Raven brought beaded serpent and the Alaskan thunder. Reality is yet to come. Good thoughts are a good way of life, wrapped in the universe, the unborn sleep and dream time. Day in the sun is on its way. Think good thoughts, thoughts of enlightened mind. Dream dreams of dreaming brings. Sense rush of new found find. View or harmony sing. Follow the sky into the blue. You are part sky, sky's part you. There are stars that bring the night. There are thoughts that bring clear sight. Not thinking good makes for strong heart, nourishment for spirit and soul. A good path, a good way to give. Belief creates what we believe. Good words. Good thoughts, good action. A way human beings live. Raven brought headed serpent and the Alaskan thunder. And I thank you for being here. Okay, so this was the conclusion of a one-hour talk by Native American poet, musician, and activist John Trudell. Trudell spoke at the benefit for UWA. They are resisting oil drilling on their ancestral lands in Colombia. So that's a kind of difficult to read somebody's transcribed speech onto paper because of all the nuances that they put into it that I'm not able to get out of it, you know, and give to you. So went through a lot of stuff there, and we want to appreciate John Trudell. So you've been listening to First Nations Radio. That took us through the whole hour. So commentary is limited to the next 30 seconds, which I'll just say stay tuned this month for I'll be having on the 24th. I'll be having Paul DeMaine, who was used to be the campaign manager for Winona LaDuke's bid for presidency. He is a writes for Native News, and he is an old friend of mine, ceremonial and powwow drum. And I'm hoping to get Tara Hauska on here soon, and any number of folks. So everyone have a beautiful day.